Chapter 14. Small, like oak trees.
"Hey, where did you get to?" shouted Rob Anybody, glaring up at her. "One minute we was just about to give them lawyers a good legal seeing to. Next minute you and the Queen was gone."
Dreams within dreams, Tiffany thought, holding her head. But they were over, and you couldn't look at the Knack Mac Feagle and not know what was real.
"It's over," she said. "Did you kill her?"
"No."
"She'll be back then," said Rob Anybody. "She's awful stupid, that one. Clever with the dreaming, I'll grant you, but not a brain in her head."
Tiffany nodded. The blurred feeling was going. The moment of wide awakeness had faded like a dream. But I must remember that it wasn't a dream.
"How did you get away from the huge wave?" she asked. "Ach, we're fast movers," said Rob Anybody. "And it was a strong lighthouse. Of course, the water came up pretty high." "A few sharks were involved, that kind of thing," said Not As Big As Medium-Sized Jock, but bigger than wee Jock Jock.
"Oh, aye, a few sharkies," said Rob Anybody, shrugging. "And one of them octopuses." "It was a giant squid," said William the Gonagall.
"Aye, well, it was a kebab pretty quickly," said Daft Woody.
"A heedful of heed, you wee wee wee," shouted Wentworth, overcome with wit.
William coughed politely.
"And the big wave threw up a lot of sunken vessels full of treasure," he said. "We stopped off for a wee pillage."
The Knack Mac Feagles held up wonderful jewels and big gold coins.
"But that's just dream treasure, surely," said Tiffany. "Fairy gold, it'll turn into rubbish in the morning."
"Aye," said Rob Anybody.
He glanced at the horizon.
"Okay, you heard the Kelder lads. We got maybe half an hour to sell it to someone. Permission to go off ski," he added to Tiffany.
Yes, fine, thank you." They were gone, in a split-second blur of blue and red. But William the Gonagall remained for a moment. He bowed to Tiffany.
"You didn't do it all badly," he said. "We're proud of ye. So would your granny be, remember that. You're not unloved."
Then he vanished too. There was a groan from Roland lying on the turf. He began to move.
"Wee wee men all gone," said Wentworth sadly in the silence that followed. "Criverin's all gone."
"What were they?"
muttered Roland, sitting up and holding his head.
"It's all a bit complicated," said Tiffany.
Do you remember much?"
It all seems like a dream," said Roland. "I remember the sea, and we were running, and I cracked a nut which was full of those little men, and I was hunting in this huge forest with shadows."
"Dreams can be very funny things," said Tiffany carefully. She went to stand up and thought, "I must wait here a while. I don't know why I know, I just know. Perhaps I knew and have forgotten, but I must wait for something."
"Can you walk down to the village?" she said.
"Oh, yes, I think so. But what did—"
"Then will you take Wentworth, will you, please? I'd like to rest for a while."
"Are you sure?" said Roland, looking concerned.
"Yes, I won't be long. Please, you can drop him off at the farm. Tell my parents I'll be down soon. Tell them I'm fine."
"Wee wee men," said Wentworth. "Crivens, want bed."
Roland was still looking uncertain.
"Off you go," Tiffany commanded, and waved him away.
When the two of them had disappeared below the brow of the hill, with several backward glances, she sat down between the four iron wheels and hugged her knees. Far off, she could see the mound of the Knack Mac Feagle. Already they were a slightly puzzling memory, and she'd seen them only a few minutes ago. But when they'd gone, they left the impression of never having been there. She could go to the mound and see if she could find the big hole, but supposing it wasn't there? Or supposing it was, but all there was down there were rabbits? "No, it's all true," she said to herself. "I must remember that too." A buzzard screamed in the dawn greyness. She looked up as it circled into sunlight, and a tiny dot detached itself from the bird. That was far too high up, even for a pixie to stand a fall. Tiffany scrambled to her feet as Hamish tumbled through the sky. And then something ballooned above him, and the fall became just a gentle floating, like thistledown. The bulging shape above Hamish was Y-shaped. As it got bigger, the shape became more precise, more familiar. He landed, and a pair of Tiffany's pants, the long-legged ones with the rosebud pattern, settled down on top of him.
"That was great," he said, pushing his way through the folds of fabric. "No more landing on my head for me."
"They're my best pants," said Tiffany wearily. "You stole them off our clothesline, didn't you?"
"Oh, aye, nice and clean,"
said Hamish. "I had to cut the lace off, because it got in the way. But I put it by, and you could easily sew it on again."
He gave Tiffany the big grin of someone who, for once, has not dived heavily into the ground. She sighed. She'd liked the lace. She didn't have many things that weren't necessary. "I think you'd better keep them," she said.
"Aye, I will, then," said Hamish. "New, what was it? Oh, yes. You have visitors coming. I spotted them over the valley. Look up there."
There were two other things up there, bigger than a buzzard, so high that they were already in full sunlight. Tiffany watched as they circled lower. They were broomsticks. "I knew I had to wait," Tiffany thought. Her ears bubbled. She turned and saw Hamish running across the grass. As she looked, the buzzard picked him up and sped onwards. She wondered if he was frightened, or at least didn't want to meet whoever was coming. The broomsticks descended. The lowest one had two figures on it. As it landed, Tiffany saw that one of them was Miss Tick, clinging anxiously onto a smaller figure who'd been doing the steering. She half climbed off, half fell off, and tottered over to Tiffany.
"You wouldn't believe the time I've had," she said. "It was just a nightmare. We threw for the storm. Are you all right?"
Yes. What happened?"
Tiffany looked at her.
"How did you begin to answer something like that?"
"The Queen's gone," she said. That seemed to cover it.
"What?
The Queen has gone?"
These ladies are our Mrs. Ogg. Morning,"
said the broomstick's other occupant, who was pulling at her long black dress, from under the folds of which came the sounds of twanging elastic.
"The wind up there blows right where it likes, I don't mind telling you."
She was a short, fat lady with a cheerful face, like an apple that's been stored too long. All the wrinkles moved into different positions when she smiled.
"And this," said Miss Tick, "is Miss
Mistress,"
snapped the other witch, dismounting.
"I'm so sorry. Mistress Weatherwax," said Miss Tick. "Very very good witches," she whispered to Tiffany. "I was very lucky to find them. They respect witches up in the mountains."
Tiffany was impressed that anyone could make Miss Tick flustered, but the other witch seemed to do it just by standing there. She was tall, except, Tiffany realised, she wasn't that tall, but she stood tall, which could easily fool you if you weren't paying attention, and, like the other witch, wore a rather shabby black dress. She had an elderly, thin face that gave nothing away. Piercing blue eyes looked Tiffany up and down from head to toe.
"You've got good boots," said the witch.
"Tell Mistress Weatherwax what happened," Miss Tick began. But the witch held up a hand, and Miss Tick stopped talking immediately. Tiffany was even more impressed now. Mistress Weatherwax gave Tiffany a look that went right through her head and about 5 miles out the other side. Then she walked over to the stones and waved one hand. It was an odd movement, a kind of wriggle in the air, but for a moment it left a glowing line. There was a noise, a chord, as though all sorts of sounds were happening at the same time. It snapped into silence.
"Jolly sailor tobacco," said the witch.
"Yes," said Tiffany. The witch waved a hand again. There was another sharp, complicated noise. Mistress Weatherwax turned suddenly and stared at the distant pimple that was the Pixie Mound.
"Knack-mack Feagle? Kelda?"
she demanded.
Yes. Only temporary," said Tiffany.
"Hm,"
said Mistress Weatherwax. Wave. Sound.
"Frying pan?"
"Yes, it's got lost, though."
"Hm."
Wave. Sound. It was as if the woman was extracting her history from the air.
"Filled buckets?"
And they filled the log box, too," said Tiffany.
Wave. Sound.
"I see. Special sheep liniment."
"Yes, my father says it puts..."
Wave. Sound.
"Ah, land of snow."
Wave. Sound.
"A queen."
Wave. Sound.
"Fighting."
Wave. Sound.
"On the sea."
Wave. Sound. Wave. Sound. Mistress Weatherwax stared at the flashing air, looking at pictures only she could see. Mrs. Ogg sat down beside Tiffany, her little legs going up in the air as she made herself comfortable.
"I've tried Jolly Sailor," she said. "Smells like toenails, don't it?"
"Yes, it does," said Tiffany gratefully.
"To be a Kelder of the Knack-Mack Feagle, you have to marry one of them, don't you?"
said Mrs. Ogg innocently.
Yeah, but I found a way round that, said Tiffany. She told her. Mrs. Ogg laughed. It was a sociable kind of laugh, the sort of laugh that makes you comfortable. The noise and flashing stopped. Mistress Weatherwax stood staring at nothing for a moment, and then said,
"You beat the Queen at the end, but you had help, I think."
"Yes, I did," said Tiffany.
"And that was?"
"I don't ask you your business," said Tiffany, before she'd even realised she was going to say it. Miss Tick gasped. Mrs. Ogg's eyes twinkled, and she looked from Tiffany to Mistress Weatherwax like someone watching a tennis match.
Tiffany, Mistress Weatherwax is the most famous witch in all—"
Miss Tick began severely, but the witch waved a hand at her again. "I really must learn how to do that," Tiffany thought. Then Mistress Weatherwax took off her pointed hat and bowed to Tiffany.
"Well said," she said, straightening up and staring directly at Tiffany. "I didn't have the right to ask you. This is your country. We're here by your leave. I show you respect, as you in turn will respect me."
The air seemed to freeze for a moment, and the skies to darken. Then Mistress Weatherwax went on, as if the moment of thunder hadn't happened.
"But if one day you care to tell me more, I should be grateful to hear about it," she said in a conversational voice. "And them creatures that look like they're made of dough, I should like to know more about them too. Never run across them before. And your grandmother sounds the kind of person I would have liked to meet."
She straightened up.
"In the meantime, we'd better see if there's anything left you can still be taught."
"Is this where I learn about witches' school?" said Tiffany. There was a moment of silence.
"Witches' school?" said Mistress Weatherwax.
Said Miss Tick. "You were being metaphorical, weren't you?" said Tiffany.
"Metaphorical?" said Mrs. Ogg, wrinkling her forehead.
She means metaphorical," mumbled Miss Tick. "It's like stories," said Tiffany. "It's all right. I worked it out. This is the school, isn't it? The magic place, the world, here. And you don't realise it until you look. Do you know the Pixies think this world is heaven? We just don't look. You can't give lessons on witchcraft, not properly. It's all about how you are. You, I suppose."
"Nicely said," said Mistress Weatherwax. "You're sharp, but there's magic too. You'll pick that up. It don't take much intelligence, otherwise wizards wouldn't be able to do it."
"You'll need a job too," said Mrs. Ogg.
"There is no money in witchcraft. Can't do magic for yourself, see? Cast iron rule."
"I make good cheese," said Tiffany.
"Cheese, eh?" said Mistress Weatherwax. Yeah, cheese is good. But do you know anything about medicines? Midwifery? That's a good portable skill."
"Well, I've helped deliver difficult lambs," said Tiffany, "and I saw my brother being born. They didn't bother to turn me out. It didn't look too difficult. But I think cheese is probably easier and less noisy."
"Cheese is good," Mistress Weatherwax repeated, nodding. "Cheese is alive."
"And what do you really do?" said Tiffany. The thin witch hesitated for a moment, and then—
"We look to the edges," said Mistress Weatherwax. "There are a lot of edges, more than people know, between life and death, this world and the next, night and day, right and wrong. And they need watching. We watch 'em. We guard the sum of things. And we never ask for any reward. That's important."
"People give us stuff, mind you. People can be very generous to witches," said Mrs. Ogg happily.
"On baking days in our village, sometimes I can't move for cake. There's ways and ways of not asking, if you get my meaning. People like to see a happy witch."
"But down here, people think witches are bad," said Tiffany. And her second thoughts added, "Remember how rarely Granny Aching ever had to buy her own tobacco?"
"It's amazing what people can get used to," said Mrs. Ogg. "You just have to start slow." "And we have to hurry," said Mistress Weatherwax. "There is a man riding up here on a farm horse. Fair hair, red face."
"It sounds like my father."
"Well, he's making the poor thing gallop," said Mistress Weatherwax. "Quick now. You want to learn the skills? When can you leave home?"
"Pardon?" said Tiffany.
"Don't the girls here go off to work as maids and things?" said Mrs. Ogg.
"Oh, yes, when they're a bit older than me."
"Well, when you're a bit older than you, Miss Tick here will come and find you," said Mistress Weatherwax.
Miss Tick nodded.
"There are elderly witches up in the mountains who'll pass on what they know in exchange for a bit of help around the cottage. This place will be watched over while you're gone. You may depend on it. In the meantime, you'll get 3 meals a day, your own bed, use a broomstick. That's the way we do it. All right?"
"Yes,"
said Tiffany, grinning happily. The wonderful moment was passing too quickly for all the questions she wanted to ask.
"Yes, but—"
"Yes?" said Mrs. Hogg.
"I don't have to dance around with no clothes on or anything like that, do I? Only I heard rumours."
Mistress Weatherwax rolled her eyes. Mrs. Hogg grinned cheerfully.
"Well, that procedure does have something to recommend it," she began. "No, you don't have to," snapped Mistress Weatherwax. "No cottage made of sweets, no cackling and no dancing."
"Not unless you want to," said Mrs. Hogg, standing up.
"There is no harm in an occasional cackle if the mood takes you that way. I'd teach you a good one right now, but really we ought to be going."
But how do you manage it?" said Miss Tick to Tiffany. "This is all chalk. You've become a witch on chalk, how?"
"That's all you know, perspicacia Tick," said Mistress Weatherwax. "The bones of the hills is flint. It's hard and sharp and useful. King of stones."
She picked up her broomstick and turned back to Tiffany.
"Will you get into trouble, do you think?" she said.
"I might do," said Tiffany.
"Do you want any help?"
"If it's my trouble, I'll get out of it," said Tiffany.
She wanted to say, "Yes, yes, I'm going to need help. I don't know what's going to happen when my father gets here. The Baron's probably got really angry. But I don't want them to think I can't deal with my own problems. I ought to be able to cope."
"That's right," said Mistress Weatherwax.
Tiffany wondered if the witch could read minds.
"Minds? No," said Mistress Weatherwax, climbing on a broomstick. "Faces? Yes. Come here, young lady."
Tiffany obeyed.
"The thing about witchcraft," said Mistress Weatherwax, "is that it's not like school at all. First you get the test, and then afterwards you spend years finding out how you passed it. It's a bit like life in that respect."
She reached out and gently raised Tiffany's chin so that she could look into her face.
"I see you opened your eyes," she said.
"Yes."
"Good. Many people never do. Times ahead might be a little tricky even so. You'll need this."
She stretched out a hand, made a circle in the air around Tiffany's hair, and then brought her hand up over the head while making little movements with her forefinger. Tiffany raised her hands to her head. For a moment she thought there was nothing there, and then they touched something. It was more like a sensation in the air. If you weren't expecting it to be there, your fingers passed straight through.
"Is it really there?" she said.
"Who knows?" said the witch. "It's virtually a pointy hat. No one else will know it's there. It might be a comfort."
"You mean it just exists in my head?" said Tiffany.
"You've got a lot of things in your head. That doesn't mean they aren't real. Best not to ask me too many questions."
"What happened to the toad?" said Miss Tick, who did ask questions.
"It's gone to live with the wee free men," said Tiffany. "It turned out it used to be a lawyer."
"You've given the clan of the Knack Mac Feagle their own lawyer," said Mrs. Hogg. "That'll make the world tremble. Still, I always say the occasional tremble does you good."
"Come, sisters, we must away," said Miss Tick, who had climbed on the other broomstick behind Mrs. Hogg.
"There's no need for that sort of talk," said Mrs. Hogg. "That's theatre talk, that is. Cheery old Tiff, we'll see you again."
Her stick rose gently in the air. From the stick of Mistress Weatherwax, though, there was merely a sad little noise like the thwop of Miss Tick's hat-point. The broomstick went kushugugugugugugug. Mistress Weatherwax sighed.
"It's them dwarfs," she said. "They say they repaired it. Oh, yes, and it starts first time in their workshop."
They heard the sound of distant hooves. With surprising speed, Mistress Weatherwax swung herself off the stick, grabbed it firmly in both hands, and ran away across the turf, skirts billowing behind her. She was a speck in the distance when Tiffany's father came over the brow of the hill on one of the farm horses. He hadn't even stopped to put the leather shoes on it. Great slices of earth flew up as the hooves, the size of large soup plates, probably about 11 inches across, Tiffany didn't measure them this time, each one shod with iron, bit into the turf. Tiffany heard a faint kushugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugugug crying at the same time. It was all a bit of a dream. Tiffany found that a very useful thing to say. It's hard to remember. It was all a bit of a dream. It was all a bit of a dream, I can't be certain. The overjoyed Baron, however, was very certain. Obviously, this queen woman, whoever she was, had been stealing children, but Roland had beaten her, oh yes, and helped these two young children to get back as well. Her mother had insisted on Tiffany going to bed, even though it was broad daylight. Actually, she didn't mind. She was tired, and lay under the covers in that nice pink world halfway between asleep and awake. She heard the Baron and her father talking downstairs. She heard the story being woven between them as they tried to make sense of it all. Obviously the girl had been very brave, this was the Baron speaking, but, well, she was 9, wasn't she? And didn't even know how to use a sword, whereas Roland had fencing lessons at his school. And so it went on. There were other things she heard her parents discussing later, when the Baron had gone. There was the way Ratbag now lived on the roof, for example. Tiffany lay in bed and smelled the ointment her mother had rubbed into her temples. Tiffany must have got hit on the head, she'd said, because of the way she kept on touching it. So, Roland with the beefy face was the hero, was he? And she was just like the stupid princess who broke her ankle and fainted all the time. That was completely unfair. She reached out to the little table beside her bed where she'd put the invisible hat. Her mother had put down a cup of broth right through it, but it was still there. Tiffany's fingers felt very faintly the roughness of the brim. We never ask for any reward, she thought. Besides, it was her secret, all of it. No one else knew about the wee free men. Admittedly, Wentworth had taken to running through the house with a tablecloth round his waist, shouting, "Wee wee men's, I'll scone you in the boot." But Mrs. Aching was still so glad to see him back, and so happy that he was talking about things other than sweets, that she wasn't paying too much attention to what he was talking about. No, she couldn't tell anyone. They'd never believe her. And suppose that they did and went up and poked around the Pixies' mound. She couldn't let that happen. What would Granny Aching have done? Granny Aching would have said nothing. Granny Aching often said nothing. She just smiled to herself and puffed on her pipe and waited until the right time. Tiffany smiled to herself. She slept and didn't dream. And a day went past. And another day. On the third day it rained. Tiffany went into the kitchen when no one was about and took down the China Shepherdess from the shelf. She put it in a sack, then slipped out of the house and ran up onto the downs. The worst of the weather was going either side of the chalk, which cut through the clouds like a prow of a ship. But when Tiffany reached the spot where an old stove and 4 iron wheels stood out of the grass, and cut a square of turf, and carefully chipped out a hole for the China Shepherdess, and then put the turf back, it was raining hard enough to soak it in and give it a chance of surviving. It seemed the right thing to do. And she was sure she caught a whiff of tobacco. Then she went to the Pixies' mound. She'd worried about that. She knew they were there, didn't she? So, somehow, going to check that they were there would be sort of showing that she doubted if they would be, wouldn't it? They were busy people. They had lots to do. They had the old Kelder to mourn. They were probably very busy. That's what she told herself. It wasn't because she kept wondering if there really might be nothing down the hole but rabbits. It wasn't that at all. She was the Kelder. She had a duty. She heard music. She heard voices. And then sudden silence as she peered into the gloom. She carefully took a bottle of special sheep liniment out of her sack and let it slide into the darkness. Tiffany walked away and heard the faint music start up again. She did wave at a buzzard circling lazily under the clouds, and she was sure a tiny dot waved back. On the fourth day, Tiffany made butter and did her chores. She did have help. "And now I want you to go and feed the chickens," she said to Wentworth. "What is it I want you to do?" "Fear cluck-clucks," said Wentworth. "Chickens," said Tiffany severely. "Chickens," said Wentworth obediently. "And wipe your nose, not on your sleeve. I gave you a handkerchief. And on the way back, see if you can carry a whole log, will you?" "Ah, crivens," muttered Wentworth. "And what is it we don't say?" said Tiffany. "We don't say the Crivens word," Wentworth muttered. "And we don't say it in front of Mummy," said Wentworth. "Good. And then when I finished, we'll have time to go down to the river." Wentworth brightened up. "Wee wee men's," he said. Tiffany didn't reply immediately. Tiffany hadn't seen a single Feagle since she'd been home. "There might be," she said. "But they're probably very busy. They've got to find another Kelder. And, well, they're very busy, I expect."
"'Wee-wee men say hit you in the head fish face,' said Wentworth happily.
"'We'll see,' said Tiffany, feeling like a parent. "'Now, please go and feed the chickens and get the eggs.'
When he'd wandered away, carrying the egg basket in both hands, Tiffany turned out some butter onto the marble slab and picked up the paddles to pat it into, well, a pat of butter. Then she'd stamp it with one of the wooden stamps. People appreciated a little picture on their butter. As she began to shape the butter, she was aware of a shadow in the doorway and turned. It was Roland. He looked at her, his face even redder than usual. He was twiddling his very expensive hat nervously, just like Rob Anybody did.
"Yes," she said.
"Look, about
Roland began.
"Yes?"
"Look, I didn't lie to anyone or anything," he blurted out. "But my father just sort of assumed I'd been a hero, and he just wouldn't listen to anything I said, even after I told him how helpful I'd been," said Tiffany.
"Yes, he said it was lucky for you I was there. He said..."
"It doesn't matter," said Tiffany, picking up the butter paddles again.
"And he just kept telling everyone how brave I'd been, and..."
"I said, it doesn't matter," said Tiffany. The little paddles went pat, pat, pat on the fresh butter. Roland's mouth opened and shut for a moment.
You mean you don't mind?"
he said at last.
"No, I don't mind," said Tiffany. "But it's not fair."
"We're the only ones who know the truth," said Tiffany. Pat, pat, pat. Roland stared at the fat, rich butter as she calmly patted it into shape.
"Oh," he said. "You won't tell anyone, will you? I mean, you've got every right to, but..."
Pat, 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 pat. "No one would believe me," said Tiffany.
"I did try," said Roland. "Honestly, I really did."
"I expect you did," Tiffany thought. "But you're not very clever, and the Baron certainly is a man without first sight. He sees the world the way he wants to see it."
"One day you'll be Baron, won't you?" she said.
"Well, yes, one day. But look, are you really a witch?"
"When you're Baron, you'll be good at it, I expect," said Tiffany, turning the butter around. "Fair and generous and decent. You'll pay good wages and look after the old people. You wouldn't let people turn an old lady out of her house. Well, I hope I..."
Tiffany turned to face him, a butter paddle in each hand.
"Because I'll be there, you see. You'll look up and see my eye on you. I'll be there on the edge of the crowd all the time. I'll be watching everything. Because I come from a long line of aching people, and this is my land. But you can be the Baron for us, and I hope you're a good one. If you are not, there will be a reckoning."
"Look, I know you were...
Roland began, going red in the face.
"Very helpful," said Tiffany. "But you can't talk to me like that, you know."
Tiffany was sure she heard, up in the roof, and on the very edge of hearing, someone say,
"Ach, Crivens, what a wee snotter."
She shut her eyes for a moment, and then, heart pounding, pointed a butter paddle at one of the empty buckets.
"Bucket, fill yourself," she commanded.
It blurred and then sloshed. Water dripped down the side. Roland stared at it. Tiffany gave him one of her sweetest smiles, which could be quite scary.
"You won't tell anyone, will you?" she said.
He turned to her, face pale.
"No, no one would believe me," he stammered.
"Aye," said Tiffany. "So we understand one another. Isn't that nice? And now, if you don't mind, I've got to finish this and make a start on some cheese."
"Cheese? But you could do anything you wanted," Roland burst out.
"And right now I want to make cheese," said Tiffany calmly.
"Go away."
"My father owns this land," said Roland, and then realised he'd said that out loud. There were two little but strangely loud clicks as Tiffany put down the butter paddles and turned round.
"That was a very brave thing you just said," she said. "But I expect you're sorry you said it, now that you've had a really good think."
Roland, who had shut his eyes, nodded his head.
"Good," said Tiffany. "Today I'm making cheese. Tomorrow I may do something else. And in a while, maybe, I won't be here, and you'll wonder, where is she? But part of me will always be here. Always. I'll always be thinking about this place. I'll have it in my eye, and I will be back. Now, Go away. He turned and ran.
After his footsteps had died away, Tiffany said, All right, who's there?
It's me, mistress. No as big as medium-sized jock, but bigger than wee jock, mistress.
The pixie appeared from behind the bucket and added,
Rob, anybody said we should come to keep an eye on you for a wee while, and to thank you for the offering.
It's still magic, even if you know how it's done, Tiffany thought. Only watch me in the dairy, then, she said. No spying.
Ach, no, mistress, said not as big as medium-sized jock, but bigger than wee jock, nervously.
Then he grinned.
Fionn's gone off to be the kelder for a clan over near Copperhead Mountain, he said, and she's asked me to go along as the gonagal.
Congratulations.
Aye, and William says I should be fine if I just work on the mouse pipes, said the pixie. And,
Yes, said Tiffany.
Hamish says there's a girl in the Long Lake clan who's looking to become a gelder. It's a fine clan she's from,
The pixie was going violet with embarrassment. Good, said Tiffany. If I was Rob anybody, I'd invite her over right away.
You didn't mind,
said not as big as medium-sized jock, but bigger than wee jock, hopefully.
Not at all, said Tiffany.
She did, a little bit, she had to admit to herself. But it was a bit she could put away on a shelf in her head somewhere.
That's grand, said the pixie. The lads were a bit worried, you ken. I'll run up and tell them.
He lowered his voice.
And would you like me to run after that big heap of jobbies that just left and see that he falls off his horse again?
No, said Tiffany hurriedly. No, don't, no. She picked up the butter paddles. You leave him to me, she added, smiling. You can leave everything to me. When she was alone again, she finished the butter. Patter, 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 patter. She paused, put the paddles down, and with the tip of a very clean finger, drew a curved line in the surface with another curved line just touching it, so that together they looked like a wave. She traced a third, flat curve under it, which was the chalk. Land under wave. She quickly smoothed the butter again and picked up the stamp she'd made yesterday. She'd carved it carefully out of a piece of apple wood that Mr. Block the carpenter had given her. She stamped it onto the butter and took it off carefully. There, glistening on the oily, rich yellow surface, was a gibbous moon, and, sailing in front of the moon, a witch on a broomstick. She smiled again, and it was Granny Aching's smile. Things would be different one day, but you had to start small, like oak trees. Then she made cheese. In the dairy, on the farm, and the fields unrolling and becoming the downlands sleeping under the hot midsummer sun, where the flocks of sheep, moving slowly, drift over the short turf like clouds on a green sky, and here and there sheepdogs speed over the grass like shooting stars, forever and ever, wold without end. That is the end of The Wee Free Men. It was written by Terry Pratchett and read by Stephen Briggs.
This has been an ISIS Audiobooks presentation. For further details of our extensive range of books on audio cassette and CD, please call our free phone number, which is 0800 731 5637.